Hey guys, welcome to the Quick Talk Podcast, the only show handcrafted for small business entrepreneurs looking to explode their business. It's time to get your mind right so you can get your grind right. Are you ready?
Eventually, you can fire yourself from being that sailboat. You can bring on staff. You can invest. You can grow and put people in positions to do jobs that you hate and probably suck at, but they love, and they're going to thrive and do it better.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining me on the Quick Talk Podcast. My name, as you know, is Joshua Latimer, and my job is to give you no fluff, straight to the point insight from some of the small business success stories from all over the world. Today, we have Michael Kaplan. I almost guarantee all of you have never heard of this guy. The way that I was introduced to him was super unique. He was a friend of a friend. But let me give you some background on Michael. He has a carpet cleaning business. But let me go back in time. He's a Vikings fan living in Minnesota today, but he studied philosophy, economics in college, even had a stint in law school, completed law school, almost did a Jimmy John's franchise, and then in the mix of all of that, circled back to start a carpet cleaning business. Now, hear me, guys. This guy's business does over $15 million a year in revenue, has 170-plus employees. It's called Zero Res. That is not a normal carpet cleaning business. Michael, I know you like to lay low and you don't like the spotlight. I'm just excited to talk to you. I appreciate you carving out an hour to take the time. How are you doing?
Oh, fantastic. It's my pleasure. I'm happy to be here.
When we talked in our pre-interview call, you're super humble. You're super low-key about what you've put together. I know you're the co-owner of Zero Res. It's a huge business. You guys are doing more carpets than probably anybody in your area. I can't imagine. And our listeners are typically smaller businesses, that usually less than $1 million in revenue. And a lot of these guys do less than $100,000 in revenue. And they're hitting their head against the ceiling trying to figure out how to make, you know, a couple thousand dollars a week. And then we have people like you who are making thousands of dollars an hour, right, with your company. So I don't even know where to start, but could you give us a little backstory on how you even got into this business?
Boy, it sounds a little terrifying when you put it in those terms. But, you know, the hardest job out there, and I literally just prior to you calling, got off the phone with a guy who's in the same position. He's an artisan. He's out there. He's fighting the good fight. I look at the world of business as, at least in my industry, there are sailboats, there are yachts, and there are battleships. And the sailboat is the hardest job because, you know, it's like owning a restaurant where you're chief line cook, you're the waiter, the chef, the accountant, the marketer. I mean, it's an unbearably difficult position, and it's not set up for success. It's very, very difficult. And until people can start to fire themselves from some of those roles and get some depth of talent and bring on some help, it's a really tough job. Absolutely.
Absolutely. I'm just taking notes. Sailboat, yachts, and battleship, and fire yourself. This is really good stuff. I mean, why is it, do you think, in your opinion, small businesses are so scared to delegate responsibility to others? And why are they so reluctant to give up the reins on some of the menial tasks that we all do in our business?
I think it's the fear itself. I think there's fear of the unknown, fear of investment, fear of loss of control. And don't get me wrong. I mean, we run a very large cleaning company today, but when we were substantially smaller, we had all those fears. We were scared to buy that fourth truck. We were scared to buy that next radio station for our media program. We were scared to delegate. I had the corner office, not that it was a sexy, you know, CEO office. It was a crappy corner office, but corner nonetheless. It had a window, and I would pick up my laptop every day and go into the phone room. And I would stop what I was doing, working on the business to build it and grow it and be strategic, to work in the business to make sure every call was answered the way it needed to be. And it was micromanaging. And, you know, there was a time and a place where it was really valuable. But at one point, my partner said to me, "Michael, you got to stop doing that crap. You need to be working on the big stuff. Let the $10 and $15 an hour folks work on the little stuff. You need to delegate that and work on the business so we can go take over the world."
Oh, absolutely. And I love the quote. I don't know if you've heard it, but progress, not perfection. Because sometimes, especially you use the word artisan, like the small business guy, he's a one truck guy, super good at what he does on a technical level. He's an artisan, like you say. But those types of guys sometimes are obsessed with perfection rather than just getting systems in place, delegating this off, delegating it. And of course, the people that you delegate to are never going to kill it at the same level that you do. So how does someone balance, you know, doing a great job with, you know, stepping away from something?
Well, so we've certainly needed to bring on lots of artisans to make sure that from a technical perspective, our business is very sound. But what the artisan typically lacks is it's that push toward progress. They, you know, in hardwood, I'm not in that industry, but you've got the floor whisperers. They know where every stick of lumber came from, which tree in which country, what temperature and what humidity it was installed in. And that's all well and good. But and there are people that need to know that. But to really grow a business, you need to have those folks coupled within systems that can really churn. And, you know, at the end of the day, a customer doesn't really care what you did for them. It doesn't matter. What matters is how they felt after you did it. And so we've focused our energy on creating systems to really wow people. And, you know, it's not smoke and mirrors. It is built on quality technical skills, but that's only half the game. And a lot of people forget that they really need to be focused on the service elements and the scalability of what they're doing. And I mean, my heart goes out to the artisan because, you know, we were there. We were that small operator that, you know, you're the cook and the line chef and the waiter all at once. But until we were willing to overcome that fear, step back and put other people in place to do those tasks so we could work on the business, we were stuck. We had the hardest job, that sailboat operator.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. There's so much good stuff there. So much stinking good stuff because the artisans, the little guys, they're freaked out that the customer is that their business is going to suffer if they're not technically perfect at every level. Now, hear me, everybody listening. We're not saying that you shouldn't be professionally competent. What we're saying is that the customer experience, and correct me if I'm wrong, Michael, but the customer experience in my business, I called it the customer life cycle. But that whole process, the way that the customer feels about your business, not that the pH of the carpet and the wicking was correct or whatever, I don't even know carpet words, but
you did really well.
Yeah. Whatever. It's not the perfection of that. It's the way they feel as they move through the sales process and the service process with your company. Is that right?
Absolutely. And it's from what they feel on the website and what they hear from their neighbors prior to calling you through that phone call or web interaction, through the touch points until they clean, up until after they clean and you put them on a re-engagement campaign. All of those things matter and they're as valuable as how the cleaning went. And, you know, some of the best experiences a customer can have is when we screw up and they see our commitment to fixing it.
Yeah, those can be incredible opportunities.
Yeah, it's a customer service opportunity. It's not we don't call it a reservice or a screw up. It's a customer service opportunity. Absolutely.
Do you have any insights on what maybe a small guy today could do? Just something little that they could implement that would help them maybe have a little more clarity with the way that they handle their customer experience. For example, I know for us, I had an actual document, a customer lifecycle document. And the first time the customer calls you, that's what we would call the first touch. Do you guys have like a specific strategy or way that you really wow people?
You know, we started with a blank page and, you know, I'll be honest, a lot of our systems, and fortunately my mom won't be listening to this podcast. She's not too into the business community, but a lot of our systems that are focused on service were developed by my fear of my mom. And it, as funny as that sounds, it terrified me, the prospect of her calling up or one of her friends calling up and getting something inconsistent with what she would expect. So we started with the blank page and said, how can we over communicate? And in Minnesota, we've got a Scandinavian background and a lot of folks really focused on clean. So it's a little different than carpet cleaning in Texas, where some of the influences are a little bit different. People here, will pay for service, but they have a high bar set. And so it, all the cleaners out there will know it starts with communication and setting expectations, getting that level playing field, telling people what you can expect and what they shouldn't expect, what you do and don't do. But, you know, you got to put in a package. You can't just say, here are the rules of what you'll get. You need to use friendly phrases and talk about what you can do rather than what you can't. It's not, I won't move these things. It's, here's what we do move. It's a lot friendlier. But start with that blank page and really think about, you know, what kind of service would you want for your mom? How would you want her to be treated? And how can you start to systemize some of those things to make them repetitive? Checklist them, put them, you know, as part of a warranty or a guarantee. And it's not just, it doesn't matter if it's a just a marketing piece or, you know, I hate seeing core values that are up on a wall, but completely inconsistent with how a business lives or just aspirational. You need to live this stuff. And if you're going to come up with those core values or those service values or those warranties, you really have to live them. So in our business, we've got what we call a gotta love it guarantee. And part of it is, you know, it's a 30-day service warranty, but we don't tell anyone that because we'll go back and we'll re-clean carpet 2-3 years after having cleaned it the first time. Because if we find out somebody's not feeling the love or not happy, it doesn't matter if we cleaned it yesterday or 3 years ago, we'll go fix it. You know, things like that. It sounds absurd, but it all comes from my favorite book, Raving Fans, kind of the customer service Bible.
Yeah, well, I'm just taking notes here as you're talking. There's so much gold in here, guys. For everybody listening, I think Michael's saying, make it your own. Use scripting and consistency in the way that you approach things. And the over-communicate thing's huge because I know in my company, most of the callbacks we got were because of an unmet expectation somewhere. Like, we sold them something, and they thought that it meant this, but it really meant that. And it's not like we were wrong. It's not like they're wrong. It just puts everybody on the defense. But if you build as part of your process a way to over-communicate, like you said, in a positive way, okay, Mrs. Smith, just to recap your service that we're going to give you today, you know, what's included is this. We're going to do this room and that room. We're going to do this and that. And just so you know, sometimes people think that we do this and this and this, and that's actually available if you want to upgrade to this package. But I just want to make sure that we over-communicate to you so you're well taken care of. Whatever it is, that is like huge.
We also seek out feedback. If you sit back and say, well, I don't know why I'm not growing. I never get any complaints. Are you asking people to complain? You should. And it sounds a little bit crazy, but we survey every customer. We use a net promoter score. I don't know if you talk about that in your podcast, but it is the coolest thing. It takes your percentage of people who love you and subtracts the percentage of people who don't. And there's a whole lot of meat in there. Basically, what it does is ask a customer two questions on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely are you to refer us to your friends and family? That's the ultimate question. There's actually a book called The Ultimate Question focused on that. And then you rank it, a 9 or a 10. That says they're a promoter. A 0 through 6 says they're a detractor. And that's your net promoter score, your promoters minus your detractors.
I think a lot of the artisans, they take this stuff so personal that they're scared to look that stuff in the face. That data, it hurts them, right? If someone gives them a bad review, it like hurts them in their gut because they're that technical perfection guy. They're the artisan, and you didn't like my $6 loaf of bread that I just made you. And so there's a difference between being professional and being taking something personal. And I just heard a podcast with Seth Godin talking about that very thing.
And there's a lot of people out there who say, oh, that customer's crazy. Well, guess what? They're your type of crazy because they're your customer. If you're finding that you're getting consistently, quote, crazy customers, something is wrong with the inputs to your business, because it's either you or it's your marketing, because you're bringing in the wrong type of customer. They want ballpoint pens and you sell Sharpies. Of course they're pissed. But until you ask the question, and start to engage with it, you've got no chance to scale and no chance to change your mojo. And, you know, the scariest thing for me, it's not the people who love me. It's not the people who hate me. It's the people who I don't know what they feel. And so we're actively looking for ways to get more and more feedback, because somebody says, boy, I'm angry about blah, blah, blah. And we get this, you know, we're in Minneapolis, we're in probably 150 homes a day on a busy day. There's so many pre-existing conditions that of course we're going to miss something. Of course we're going to get some negative feedback. I love that because I can engage with it. We get the phone call that says, I'm so angry, he missed a room and this and that. Mr. Johnson, I'm really, truly sorry that happened. How can I fix it? When can I get out there? And the tone changes from, boy, I'm so angry to, oh, I thought you were that company that wouldn't stand behind your work. No, I mean, we're not going to charge you for it, and we're going to go fix it. We're going to kill it with kindness. Give me that opportunity. I'm thrilled. If I don't have that opportunity, I don't get feedback or survey results, that's where I'm nervous.
Wow, that's really good. Me and my partner would always say we run towards problems. Because you just got to hit it straight in the mouth head on instantly, just right away. Boom, deal with it. Deal with it. Deal with real life. And once in a while, you get a crazy scraggler. But that doesn't matter because you don't build your systems around the anomaly, right? You build your systems around the normal. And if you run towards problems in general, it usually makes you look like a hero in the end to those customers.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's not that we never drop the ball on customer service, but we try to systematize and create a culture around take that extra step, do the absurd to really get a positive result, kill them with kindness.
Absolutely. And you guys also play the long game. I mean, what I'm hearing is you manage the customer relationship. I call that relationship marketing. The value of that customer for the lifetime is 15 times what it is for that one cleaning, especially if you count referrals and stuff like that.
I'll steal your phrase. You talked about being a commodity and needing to decommoditize your business. I love that we're going this direction, because when you think of your business as a transaction, you're a commodity. You are replaceable by, in my industry, by the next guy, by the rental carpet cleaner, or by not cleaning at all. You're no better than the other guy or the other opportunity. When you build relationships and you step out of that transactional mentality, then you're part of the family. You're doing something unique that makes people feel good about their home, feel valuable, feel like they spent their money well, and you've got a relationship, and that's what sticks. Transactions don't.
Absolutely. That's absolute gold. I hope everybody's hearing this, because you guys have to give them an experience and you have to manage the lifetime value of the customer by being relationally minded. Can you speak a little bit about your experience with the artisan guys, the smaller guys, and how they price their service? Because a lot of guys, they'll go to do a bid up against someone like you, and they'll lose the bid. And when they lose the bid, they go home depressed, they hang their head low, they talk to their wife, they don't understand. Even though their price was lower, they didn't get the job. So what do? They lower their price even more. and then they perpetuate the cycle of failure, because they attract the wrong types of customers, and they're not focused on the customer experience. They're focused just on being a commodity. So have you seen that? And what do you have to say to help that guy kind of have the light bulb moment?
You know, it certainly is a vicious cycle. When you charge cheap prices, you get cheap customers. And I think you need to find your couple of things you can be the best at and stand by them. And, you know, depending on the job, if you're going out bidding an apartment complex, of course, give some work away for free. I try to give as many hugs to the important people as I can. You know, if I need to clean that guy's house and his neighbor's house and the neighbor next to that to try and get a townhome complex. I mean, that's small potatoes. You have to do that. But I think what a lot of artisans aren't willing to do is invest. They're really savvy cleaners, but they're not really savvy business people. And I look at the financials of a company, the money in the bank, as the same as the food that a baby needs to grow. And to become the company you want to be, you need to prioritize your company. You need to feed it first. It needs to have the money, not your pocketbook. So getting into business, I mean, we were dead broke. We didn't have a bank account that had big numbers in it. We ran everything skinny and didn't pay ourselves and sucked it up so that we could continue to invest to figure out what our thing was going to be, to continue to figure out what the marketing medium was going to be, what the equipment needed to be. And then when we figured out what worked, we said, let's keep doing that till it don't work anymore. And, you know, until you start getting diminishing marginal returns on an avenue of investment, you keep going. You push it as far as it'll go, but you have to be committed to investing. And I think that's something that a lot of small business owners don't do because they prioritize lifestyle or income. But those are short-term things. And if you prioritize those, you don't have a business, you have a job. And having a job really sucks for a business.
Yeah, it's actually worse than a regular job, because a regular job, you can kind of clock out, go home, and shut your brain off. But everybody knows listening to this that you can never turn off your business. You know, it's always on your mind. So I have a friend in New Jersey I did an interview with and a webinar with. And when his business was doing $100,000 a month, when he was starting to really scale and get some legs under the thing, he was still eating bologna sandwiches, living on nothing. And I always think that's funny, because that's exactly what you're talking about.
That's what you got to do, though. I mean, you fake it till you make it. And if your rear view mirror isn't years of financial statements that make sense, where there's money in the bank and a database of customers that are blowing up your phones, you haven't made it. And I mean, we're not looking in the rear view mirror and resting on our laurels, and we clean, you know, $1.5 million a month. I mean, we're still trying to get better. We say good is the enemy of great. And until we're great, and guess what? We're never going to get there on all accounts, but until we're great, we're going to keep fighting and stay scrappy.
Well, I love that, because the little artisan small businesses, they choke their own business and they don't even know they're doing it. Let's say a business has $100,000 in revenue. It's year one. They think they're doing okay. Let's say they have 30% gross profit margin. I have no idea what's normal in the carpet business. But let's say that they do, right? They keep all of it. They don't understand that to scale, they have to purchase new customers. There's a CAC in there. There's a customer acquisition cost, and they need cash to do it. And then they get confused why they plateau out so quickly. Is that a good debriefing of what you were trying to say?
Oh, absolutely. I think it makes a ton of sense. People, if you're short-sighted and you're not, first, if you're not setting goals and then you're not checking in on those goals, you're just not set up for success. And if you look at your business and it's not where you want it to be, you have to assess every system that's in place, purposeful or not. And I had a smart guy tell me once that every system in a business is perfectly designed to get exactly the result it gets. So if you're getting crappy results, it's your systems, and sometimes it's you. This daughter is teaching her daughter how to prepare the Christmas ham. And she says, "Mom, why'd you cut the ends off?" "Well, you have to." "Well, why?" "Because that's the way I was taught to do it. You got to do it." "Well, why?" So the lady goes to her mom, her kid's grandmother, and says, "So, Mom, why do we cut the ends off the ham?" "Well, when you were a kid, I only had one pan, and you know the ham never fit in it, so I cut the ends off." So you've got this system that's just ridiculous, completely irrelevant to how the world works, but you keep doing it because you do what you do. And when you live that way in a small business and you're not constantly assessing and constantly poking and constantly trying to find out why that system could improve or why it's getting the result it's getting, you're going to get results inconsistent with your goals. Or again, God forbid you don't have goals, you're going to just get what you get.
Oh my gosh, it's so good, because people are, they don't do self-analysis. They're not honest with themselves. They don't look in the mirror. I think they'd rather impress their drinking buddies with a new bass boat than they would take a hard look in the mirror, re-systemize, re-optimize, iterate and pivot some of their systems, and then double down that cash into scaling harder the next month. They'd rather have the bass boat and look cool temporarily. They seek temporary pleasure rather than long-term success, you know, and I see that so often. That's a really cool example with the ham, because the granddaughter is literally doing something that's totally not applicable anymore.
Listen up.
Now, remember, being self-employed is not the same as being a business owner. And if you are looking for a way to automate your business and build yourself a clear path to the dream that keeps eluding you, then check out my online small business bootcamp. It's a go at your own pace. It's power packed. It's a mind bomb. It will help you understand exactly how to architecture out and systematize your small business right now so you can finally be back in control. Go to windowwealth.com right now and check it out. Use the code MINDBOMB to save 30%. It's time to invest in yourself.
You keep it nimble, you got to invest, and you got to live skinny. And you make short-term sacrifices and not pay yourself and not buy the bass boat so that your business can thrive. And eventually you can fire yourself from being that sailboat. You can bring on staff, you can invest. You can grow and put people in positions to do jobs that you hate and probably suck at, but they love, and they're going to thrive and do it better.
Yeah, that's a really good point, is that small business owners wearing all those hats, they suck at probably 80% of those hats.
Yeah.
Right? So but they're stuck doing it because there's no, it's just them.
It's certainly possible. You know, some people thrive on it. Some people love the hustle, and some people love, you know, having an owner operator business where it's just them. And this is, none of this conversation's intended to dismiss the validity of that model or suggest that it's wrong. But what's frustrating as a business owner myself is to see people who aren't getting what they want out of their business. And hopefully some of these conversations help people fire themselves from that broken model where they're working in their business, not on it.
Yeah. Well, can we talk about leadership too? Because you're pushing 200 employees company wide. I mean, you're a leader. Obviously you're developing other leaders. So you're at that next layer. You're not just dealing with the boots on the ground, but you're dealing with the leaders of the company. How important is leadership in a small business? Do you have any nuggets for us that we could apply in our businesses?
Oh, it's huge. And we, our business, we operate on what's called EOS or traction. Are you familiar with EOS?
No, not at all.
Okay. It's entrepreneurial operating system. And what it does is it's basically a series of communication mechanisms that we've put in that structures our company. Instead of having an organizational chart, we have an accountability chart. It creates this common vernacular that we all use. We've split the company up into teams based on the structure provided within EOS, and it's been huge. It's really helped us coordinate and organize. And from a leadership perspective, it has certainly had an impact at helping us figure out what's working and what's not. The first thing you have to do is define where you want to go. You got to own that vision and build around that vision. And then look at the bus and say, what seats need to be on the bus and how do we put the right people in the right seats? And people want to be good at their jobs. People love getting positive feedback and doing good work. And when you're not getting good results, it's not surprising that you've got either unhappy people or unhappy results when you've got those wrong people in those seats. So pushing actively to do that assessment, I think, is what we do a really good job at, figuring out how do we get that alignment with the vision and how do we get the right people in the right seats. And when you've got those right people in the right leadership seats, they're operating within their core competency. They know where they're driving, and they're empowered to go out and fill the rest of the staff with their direct reports.
Wow, that's really good stuff. I mean, leadership produces more leaders, and management produces just more managers. And if you're going to scale and have an organization the size of yours, I love the way that you're using the word accountability and vision and the school bus, because your job, Michael, really is to be the coach, not the quarterback, right? You got to recruit and then inspire the quarterback to make that play. You can't be the guy doing all this stuff. You got to have your team performing in the field. And I think we kind of miss that point sometimes.
Certainly. So my day job, you asked me before, am I my CEO? Am I co-CEO? Am I co-owner? Yes. But I, what we call it in my business is using the vernacular of traction or EOS. My role is visionary, and I'm co-visionary with my business partner. And so my job description in that capacity is you know, coming up with great ideas about customer service and coming up with 1,000 bad ideas that get shot down on a daily basis, and filtering those through the leadership team to figure out which ones actually are good and doable. But then I also have a role on the accountability chart. And in that role, I'm not the boss. I work for the head of the marketing team. I run our advertising campaigns, and I report directly to the head of marketing, because I'm not the smartest guy in the room when it comes to all things marketing. I own and am accountable to the advertising budget and the numbers within that budget and the production, but you know, I'm not the big cheese. And I think knowing your place in that regard, not knowing when you are the quarterback and when you're not, is a really important in growing a team.
Well, I'm just blown away, really, at the way that you handle these questions and the way that you set yourself up, because the humility you have, I'm telling you right now, Michael, people are going to just eat this interview up because it's so needed. But there's also a segment of people that are going to listen to this, and I can hear them doing it right now. They're making excuses, Michael. They're making excuses because, well, I don't have a philosophy and economics degree. I didn't go to law school. I don't know how to raise capital and, you know, acquire and scale these businesses. So I'm off the hook. I don't have to have a vision for my company. I don't have to really put these things in place. I can just make excuses and say, you know, Michael Kaplan's special. He's different. I'm not like him. What do you have to say to the little guy, quote unquote, who needs to be kicked in the butt a little bit so that he can build the dream that he really wants?
You absolutely need to start with defining the dream. And people who don't set goals are going to get what they get all day. You've got no ability to move the needle. Go out and read a book like The Game of Work. It's all about goal setting and how to do it and why to do it. Getting on audio if that's easier. You know, you don't need to sit behind a desk to engage in these ideas, but you have to go out and start by saying, where are you and where do you want to be? And then, okay, so you didn't go to college, or you don't have the time to put in just, you know, pontificate about where you are and where you're going. Bring on a board of directors. It might sound corny for, you know, an artisan cleaner who, you know, does 150 grand in revenue to say to his buddies, hey, you know, come be my board of directors. But go out and find people who have done it before, who are smart, who are willing to invest time in you. And, you know, you can trade, give them free cleaning, you know, wash their windows or clean their carpets or do what you do. People in the business world who are really students of the game like talking about it. I'm not paid for being on this podcast. I like business. I like the game. I like being in it. And you know, Mike Dahlke, who referred you to me, or me to you, who introduced us, that's the phrase. He's a student of the game. He loves it. He and I, you know, we'll go out to lunch and just jibber jabber about our different businesses, which are totally different and exactly the same at the same time. Those type of people will invest in you if you go out and find the opportunities. So there's no way that I got where I am by thinking I was the best at doing what I do. I went out looking for banking relationships. I looked for insurance relationships. I looked for talent in all different arenas, in marketing. And you know, sometimes we hired people, sometimes we just had lunch. But anything's worth the time and the cost a cup of coffee. So go out and expose yourself to these people and these ideas. And maybe you formalize and you create a board. Maybe you join a CEO roundtable and you just beat up business ideas. But it is excuses if you say, boy, you know, I don't have the background or the education or experience to go do these things. You can't eat an elephant all at once. You take small bites. And one at a time, you need to chip away and get your real world MBA. But yeah, if you make an excuse and just sit back and say, well, I can't do it, you're going to get what you get.
You're going to get what you get, and you don't throw a fit.
Oh, I love that. My daughter says that to me. Daddy, you get what you get, and don't throw a fit.
It's a preschool thing, because my kids brought that home from preschool one day, and I was like, actually true. That's kind of profound, but I'm going to do a quote bomb. Okay, I got three quotes based on what you just – the mind bomb, the value bomb, like John Lee Dumas would say from a different podcast, that you just laid out for everybody listening, okay? First of all, begin with the end in mind. That's a Stephen Covey concept, right? You got to begin at the destination. If you don't have a goal, you ain't got nothing. So there's quote number one, begin with the end in mind. Quote number two is, a goal without a date is just a dream. Okay, there's quote number two. No idea who said that, but I didn't make it up, but it's good. The third one is a Bible verse, without a vision, my people perish. And I think without a vision, your business is going to perish. You got to have a destination. I love that you're called the chief visionary. That's amazing. That's good stuff. And then the last one is the Rory Vaden quote. I think it's success isn't owned, it's rented, and the rent is due every day. And because you studied economics and went to law school, you're obviously a sharp guy. That's not why you're succeeding. You're succeeding because you're executing, building relationships, and doing stuff every day.
Well, I would say that I have moments of brilliance, and then the rest of the time I'm less than. We'll say that to be diplomatic. But I stole a quote myself, and it's live deliberately. And Henry David Thoreau said, "Live deliberately," and to me, that really stuck with me. And he built his whole life around that concept. He went out and isolated himself from society and went out and did shit on purpose. And that's what I've tried to do. I try to wake up every day and look in the mirror and be the man I want to be. And I get my butt kicked most of the time and often come up short. But I mean, if you don't set goals and you don't say, here's where I want to be, and set those timelines and dates and things like that, you're going to wake up one day and be 65 and your bones are going to ache and you're going to say, I didn't do the shit I wanted to do. Now I'm old. And it just terrifies me to have that happen. And so on a constant basis, I'm trying to regroup. I'm trying to step out of the business and really think about what is important to me? How do I get it? And what impediments are there, and how do I overcome them?
Yeah, that's really good stuff. I mean, you're being intentional with your own life. You're taking responsibility for your own life. And I encourage everybody to do the same thing, including myself. None of us have ever arrived anywhere. This is a journey. And I don't know. This is just so much good stuff. Is there anything else you can think of that you want to touch on specifically? Something that's really itching at you? Anything you could share with our listeners that's maybe an actionable tip for their business that they could put in place tomorrow that could help them?
A couple of thoughts, and they're probably corny, but I think a lot of business owners are scared to fail, and I think a lot of business owners are scared to quit, and being both of those things hold you back. And it being scared to fail, you should be scared to make bad mistakes, and you should be scared to screw up and to take risks, but they shouldn't inhibit you. They should be a check and balance system that says, okay, is this the right decision? Should I move forward? I'm looking at this data. Are there other ways to interpret it? You need to double check and gut check those types of things, but don't be afraid. You can't be out in the game and be successful if you're afraid. The second thing is, you can't be afraid to quit. And, it's probably too often that people don't look at what they're doing and really analyze and assess whether it makes sense. Sometimes you need to fire yourself from activities. You need to look at service line items and say, hey, that one's never profitable. And maybe you need an outsider's opinion. Maybe you need a consultant or a CPA or just a friend to look at your numbers to help you analyze them. But if you're engaged in activities that don't make any sense, fire yourself. Be bold. Take that bold mood and focus on the things that are profitable. Quitting sometimes is a great thing. And I forget the book, but there's a great book that is all about knowing when to quit. And I think too few business people are willing to do that. They say, well, you know, but it's such a big part of my revenue. Well, but it also sucks up a huge part of your time and it's not very profitable. So is it really good revenue? Because it doesn't matter, you know, what you bring in top line. It's, you know, are you able to keep something? Can you cash flow from it?
Yeah, one of the big issues that comes up when I do small business consulting with people, Michael, is that they want to grow their business. And so they think what they need to do is offer more stuff rather than niche down into the thing they're awesome at. They think, okay, we need to do carpet cleaning and pressure cleaning and window cleaning and lawn service. And obviously that'll ruin everything. But they don't see it that way. You don't need to go wide. You just need to go deeper and do a better job with your marketing engine and your systems, yeah. Right?
In 2008, we were just a tiny little company. We had five trucks and we had pushed to get some good press, and you know an article came out about us in Minneapolis Star Tribune business section, September 11th 2008. It's kind of the turning point of our business, and we had started up a hardwood company that was refinishing and doing, you know, sandless refinishing of hardwood, and it was thriving. It was doing pretty well. This good press comes out about us. And we had seven phone lines lit up for 7 days a week for about 5 weeks. I mean, we had never seen carpet cleaning business come in like this. We quit hardwood, within a week of seeing where this business could go on the carpet side, because we realized that we couldn't be everything to everyone. It was the wrong time, even though we were getting a great response early on. It was all hands on deck. We needed to focus where the action was at the defined bigger market, rather than trying to create a brand. We all of a sudden had this opportunity. We needed to focus. And so we had, you know, 50 grand in equipment, a whole bunch of man hours and labor that had gone into this startup, and we walked away.
Wow. That takes a lot of balls, really. I mean, you said it was profitable. You had to make a quick decision, or I like to call it a pivot. So you're living your life, things happen in real time, the phones are blowing up, you don't want to dilute your efforts, and you made a really tough decision to pivot straight back into carpet cleaning and focus on that. I think a lot of people don't have the clarity to see opportunities like that, you know, maybe because they don't have a team, they don't have people to go to coffee with and be accountable with that are trying to do the same things. Having a Michael Dahlke in your life and having your business partners and having people that are hungry around you is a huge, huge thing. And sometimes we just need that clarity, and it can come from a good friend or, like you said, a mentor.
Absolutely. And if you don't have one, go find one. Operating in a vacuum sucks. It really is painful, and it hurts your business, because everyone's got blinders on. Everyone's got blind spots, and you can't identify them on a consistent basis, or they wouldn't be blind spots.
Yeah, absolutely. In closing, I want to talk about customer service a little bit more, if we could, because I thought of something while we were finishing up.
Absolutely.
I have a software company that helps people follow up with their customers after a sale. And I sell this primarily to cleaning businesses all over the country. And one of the hardest things that I have a hard time getting through to people is the importance of, regardless if they use my software, but just the concept of managing the relationship after you do the job, and why that is absolutely critical. Could you speak to maybe what you guys do in your company? Because I know there's got to be, you know, I don't know if it's an email newsletter or postcards or how you manage that, but there's all kinds of stuff happening after that initial transaction, correct, in your business? And do you have any tips on how you handle that post-transaction relationship?
Absolutely. I mean, we're like we talked about earlier, we're trying to decommoditize and make it less of a transaction and more of an experience and a relationship. And so we start by, there's an automated receipt that comes out. It's paperless. It gets shot to them with our contact info, so that it's a subtle touch point, but it says, hey, we care that you've got our information. We're not, you know, oh, I'll mail it to you later, and then it never gets to them. We follow up with a thank you email that says, we're thrilled to have been in business with you. If you loved us, post online. If anything didn't meet your expectations, even small, call the Bat phone. And there's our contact number. We're begging for feedback and begging for people to tell us how we could do better, or you know, give us the opportunity to fix it. And then real quick after that, the next day, they get a survey that it's that Net Promoter Score that says how likely are you to refer us to friends or family. Those simple touch points are kind of the first phase of that post-cleaning relationship. And they're more informational and really focused on making sure that the customer got what they needed and that we're getting feedback. From there, we're not bogging people down with tons of emails, but we're staying in touch. We're trying to be valuable, and we're not out promoting sales. We're trying to promote brand imaging and give people the right feeling about us. Again, I mentioned before, it doesn't matter what you do for a customer. What matters is how they felt after you did it. And we're trying to reinforce the brand experience that we hopefully delivered to them. And it's trying to make them feel good about what we provided and make them aware and feel good about what we could provide in the future, other service lines or other core service cleanings for them. But it's not bombarding them with, here's a coupon, here's a coupon, here's a coupon.
Wow. There's a ton of touch points, and there's so much good there. I mean, I don't need to comment on it. It speaks for itself. There's a huge amount of money left on the table when people just leave the job site and say, well, hopefully they call me back next year, right?
Well, absolutely. And if you try to look at this and say, okay, yes, maybe you're a sailboat, maybe you have a job today, but you run a business, what's your succession plan? And how can you extract value when you want to leave your business? The only thing you have of value is your database. Are you going to nurture it, or are you going to neglect it? And it either of those is an active decision. You're either going to ignore it or you're going to foster it. And your job gets so much easier when your customer acquisition cost is pennies because it's emails and you're just staying in touch, or it's pennies because it's referrals because you had a focus on the service experience. New customer acquisition, it's a pain in the ass, and it's more expensive and less effective, and you got to do it, but it's so much easier to stay in touch with the people who love you and the people who could love you by staying continuing that brand messaging about a positive experience that you could offer.
Are you looking for a simple way to get more sales, more referrals, and strengthen your customer loyalty? Look no further than sendjim.com. It was handcrafted for you as a powerful tool that will automate your follow-ups after the sale. Imagine being able to stay in contact with your customers all year long by pushing a single button on your smartphone. This is a space-age warp speed technology, and it will eliminate the chaos inside your business caused by trying to properly follow up with all of your leads and customers. Sign up for a free trial with no credit card required at sendjim.com right now. What are you waiting for? If you're a small business and you don't have a systematic way just to say, hey, thank you so much for your business. We're a small family company and we appreciate it. If you're not doing that, I don't even know what to say to that, because that's complete madness to me.
Absolutely. And sometimes it needs to be a literal thank you, and sometimes you need to show that you appreciate it. And, what we do in the home, again, it doesn't matter what you do, it's how they feel when you do it. So what that says is the things you do need to be emotive. If you're going to do, we call it a plus one service, we do something free in every home. And when we coach our guys, we say, you've got two options. You can do it publicly or you can do it privately. And how much value are you adding for the customer if you do them a solid, you give them something for free, and you don't tell them about it? Well, a minimal amount. Yeah, they got something clean, but they can't enjoy it. They can't experience it. Or you could say, hey, Mrs. Johnson, that bedroom that you decided you didn't want to pay for? Well, I'm going to go ahead and do that because I like working in your neighborhood, and I just want to say thank you. Something subtle like that, it's easy. It takes you 10 minutes. It's not a big deal financially. Nobody needs to get paid on it. But you know, there's this great ice cream shop, and it's called Izzy's. And on top of your ice cream cone, they give you a tiny little scoop of something else. So you order mint chocolate chip, and you get maybe cookie dough, and they call it the Izzy scoop. It's the little plus one that goes a long way. It's something on top that nobody was really expecting, that you can't complain if you didn't get, but boy, aren't you glad that you got it.
And that right there is the definition of decommoditizing your business, because they don't have anything to compare that to, Michael. Like, they've got their carpets cleaned 10 times by 10 companies, but now it's Zero Res shows up and they do that. It's over. You're not the $1 loaf of bread next to all the other $1 loaves of bread. You're the $6 artisan bread on its own shelf in its own section now. They can't even, what do they compare that to? It's amazing. And all of us could do that tomorrow with our customers.
You don't need to be a big company to have purposeful execution of service principles, but you have to have a plan. You have to say what goal that plan is driving toward, and then you have to wake up every day and do it on purpose to get there.
Such good stuff. I can't wait to get this out to everybody. Michael, thank you so much for joining me. I'm just thankful. You have no motive to do this other than the fact that you love business and you like helping people, and we're very thankful for your time.
The pleasure is all mine. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for hanging out, friends. And from all of us here at the Quick Talk Podcast team, we hope you love today's show. We hope that you were inspired to become a doer and not just a listener. Apply what you've heard today in your own business and watch things change for the better. Lastly, remember that all the money in the world can't save your soul. Seek first the kingdom of God, my friends. We'll see you next time.
For more information about the Quick Talk Podcast or Joshua's other businesses, visit our website, quicktalkpodcast.com. Have a blessed day.